So welcome everyone to Art of Advisory. My name is Hector Garcia from Quick Bookkeeping, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kirk Bowman from Art of Advisory. Hey, Kirk, how are you?
Doing well, Hector. Good to see you again.
Same thing. We are excited to have Amy Vetter as a guest speaker today. Amy is actually an accountant. She used to be solely a QuickBooks practitioner and then a sort of a QuickBooks, a software consultant in the accounting space. And she actually went to work for the three largest accounting software companies that I know, QuickBooks, Sage, and Xero. And now she's developed a program called the B3 Method, which is part of her book called Business Balance and Bliss that was published earlier last year. And she also has a second book. She's an author of a second book called Integrated Advisory Services. So we're excited to ask her about this concept of business balance and bliss, and also about integrated accounting services. So we'll talk about both books. And Amy, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I'm glad to be here. It's good to see you again, Hector, as well. So we go way back.
Yes. Yeah, we do. Last time I saw Amy, she was teaching a practice management techniques at Intuit. This was 2011. So it was quite a bit back. So Amy, let me start with your book, Integrated Advisory Services. Since we talk about the art of advisory and the how to go about advisory, can you give us a Reader's Digest version of sort of the genesis of the book, why you wrote the book, where maybe some of your background that led you to write the book, and some of the key points about it?
Sure. Well, I think what's hard for accountants everywhere is, you know, definitely in the field, it's like become an advisor, move into advisory services. It's what the future is. And we've been called advisors throughout our career as a trusted advisor or QuickBooks advisor or Xero, whatever you are. However, what happens is that we don't actually understand what that transition is. How do we actually get to advisory services and what makes it different from the everyday accounting work that we're used to? And so this book, you know, I ran a practice actually in South Florida, very close to Hector for many, many years. And it really goes through how you set up technology, how you actually define who you are as a company. So it's not just about putting services out there. It's really identifying your purpose, your mission, your why, and then designing the technology and the processes around that. And then once you've got that technology in place, the gift of technology is that it frees up your time to spend more time with your clients. But because we haven't been spending all that time with our clients, that's the true advisory work. And we need to retool so that we feel comfortable in those conversations and how we get those skills to build those relationships, because those relationships are gold. And we can grow those relationships to keep growing our revenue if we put the same amount of time to the soft skills as we do to our technical skills.
And Amy, I wanted to ask, dive into one concept that's from your book, which is that right now there's so much technology being thrown at us, like new technology, and the existing technology that we're used to also changes. Mm-hmm. And then also there's like all these modules or apps, whatever you want to call it, that also gets added to it. And we have, we spend so much time just keeping up with the technology. And I believe that a lot of us make the mistake of and not necessarily a mistake, but it's more of, you know, where you want to go with your business, that to make the technology itself the advisory services. And then we forget what is it about the advisory services that people find most valuable. So what is it? What is it that, why does that happen, or how can we change that paradigm?
I think we get consumed with all the learning, and a lot of times what I have found, especially in our field, a lot of us are type A and we like to control everything and do everything. And we have to get to the point of trusting and delegating so that we're spending the right time with our clients as well as the setup of our practice and the things that we do. And what I mean by that is, even if you're a sole practitioner, you may think, well, you know, I'm the only one to do this, but actually that's not true. You can invest in people that specialize in just technology integrations and helping you assess it and making sure everything's set up properly, how you want your reporting, and you're still spending your time with your client. You don't have to hire these people as employees, and you'll start learning it over time by working with those people as well. So, you know, we have to actually come over to the other side of, like you said, what's the purpose? Why are we in this? And it's not about setting up tech, unless that's what our expertise is and that's what we love to do. But if what we're trying to do is be advisors, we need to use the technology to free up our time so we're spending more time with our clients, and then figure out how to spread the work so that we're not overwhelmed.
And let me ask you some specific questions. So one of the main challenges that I've had, and I think a lot of our audience has, is we have existing clients that we do, you know, something that most people don't call advisory work. It's accounting, regular routine work, but built in or sprinkled through the service has been giving advice. Now, some people would say you've been giving advice for free. Some people argue that the advice is what adds value to the underlying work, and that's what creates loyalty or attracts the client in the first place. And I think anyone that wants to quote unquote transition to advisory services is because they want to charge for it. Because again, most of us already are giving advice in one way, shape, or form, especially if we are experts in our field or if we have an area of specialty. But what are the conversation techniques? How do we make that transition to those existing clients in which we haven't traditionally labeled our work as advisory? And now we want to say, look, we're going to put this advisor hat. We want to get paid for our advice. What are some of the conversation tips, tricks, techniques, and experience that you've had that can help us with that?
Well, I think especially for people that do tax returns. So, you know, we've gone through, you know, you might still be in an extension period, you know, and you'll be able to come out of that in the fall. Those are the perfect times to talk about the advisory services when you're delivering the work. Now, just to back up before we get into that conversation, because I think it's really important that in my book, I talk about understanding your purpose. And a lot of times we let our business run us versus us determining what type of clients we want to work with, right? And where we feel comfortable and what excites us, right? Like if we're working with certain industries, it doesn't feel like work. And it's important we identify that for ourselves, even if we've got a bulk of clients today. But if we look across, and for example, I own a yoga studio. Health and wellness businesses to me are really, really important. And it's not just me doing their accounting. My larger purpose behind it is that I want to keep those businesses open so those customers can keep walking through those doors and be able to get the benefit of what those businesses offer, right? It's the bigger purpose behind what I do as an accountant. When I can align my business around that larger purpose, then it becomes more fulfilling with what we're doing, right? We want to spend more time in those businesses, learning what they do, how we can help them. So if I'm, you know, if I segment myself and I say health and wellness businesses are an industry that I want to go after, I'm going to then go through software selection and talk to those customers. So I might pick one or two customers that are friendly clients and say, I'm not going to charge you the next couple months. I want to test these applications with you, see how this workflow would go, right? Before I ever enter into a sales conversation, what reports would matter to you? What KPIs would matter to you that when we have those conversations, this is going to be really meaningful to pay for my services on a monthly basis. Once I start putting that together and actually hearing from the client's perspective what my value is, then I might deliver the tax return, and instead of delivering it in the way that I've always done it, maybe I run it through my accounting software or the add-ons that I've hooked up for the KPIs for that industry. and instead give them graphs and metrics to show them how their business did. Like, I run that tax return through that rather than just handing them a piece of paper. And then I have a conversation with them of like, these are some things we noticed when we were doing your tax return this last year. Maybe some things we need to focus on before the year's over, right? In that conversation alone, then the client is like, wow, how could I get this advice more often? Because you just delivered something they've never had, you know, in a normal compliance service. And then you can start opening up the conversation. Well, if you want to meet on a monthly basis or a quarterly basis, this is how it would work. These are the reports that we would go over. We would meet virtually online just like this and be able to answer any questions you're having so we can monitor to make sure you stay on track. But then you've got a bigger value proposition than just trying to say, well, now I'm offering advisory services, but not really showing the client what's in it for them.
Okay, so let me see if I get that straight. So let's say you design advisory services around creating projection reports, dashboard style reports, you know, bringing some additional insight that you don't traditionally bring. And you're saying pretty much create a mini version of that and preview it.
Give them the carrot.
Okay. Yeah, you just have to design the service. So there's two versions of it. There's the one that can tease it enough where it adds value, but it doesn't give it all away. And Amy, I'll ask you a quick question, and then I'll switch it over to Kirk. Is there a risk on giving it that time away? Is there a risk in terms of you know, the value? Like, if the customer perceives that you were able to do that real quick at the same time that you did that traditional tax return, how is the customer going to perceive that this is something that they...
I love this question. Okay, so we have to change our mindset, okay? When a customer... This is where we as accountants value ourselves differently than the client actually values us. And I always use this example. When I started out in accounting, it was like the weight of the paper. Like, how much work I did based on like how much I printed out, right? And it was like, yes, you know, like we got all this work done. However, in this day and age, clients are about speed. They are not about how much time it took us to get to an answer. They could hook that software and get that data and have no idea what it means, right? Like, they can pay for the software, but they don't know how it can actually impact their business like an accountant can. This is where we have to start valuing our expertise and not the calculation, right? So if a client got an answer quicker than they've ever gotten it before, and then we've explained how it can actually impact their business, there's a huge amount of value there. They're not going, well, that didn't take you 40 hours to come up with that answer. Like, wow, I really needed that answer. The value is in the answer, not the time. And we have to shift our mindset to the way the clients are shifting, because when we say, well, you know, in our heads, well, if we're calculating this through an Excel spreadsheet and it takes us 40 hours, and the client's like, I need this answer like tomorrow. We are not giving them value by taking more time to calculate the answer. So we have to remove ourselves from that thought process. And then secondly, the other part of your question was, are we giving it away? We need to look at any marketing that we do. And this would be considered marketing, right? Like, that we are actually giving them something at the time of the tax return that's different than they've ever experienced before. But this is what I call in the book, becoming a cherished advisor. So I picked the word cherished because what it means is treasured. And that's something you have to earn. It's not just being an advisor. It's like, your client can't imagine not having you as part of their business. Well, if you are providing those services and you're giving them that insight of what those services would be, and out of 100 clients, you get 30 new advisory clients because you did it differently, you need to look at the return on investment of that, not on, well, I didn't get 70 clients. It's like, I just upsold 30 of my clients to monthly advisory services, and I'm going to be more efficient, have less errors, be able to deliver services in a new way. We have to flip our thinking on that of like, that's the cost of any kind of marketing or business development of there's something you're spending money on or giving time away in order to gain a new service line or a new market or whatever your goals are.
Amy, two things that you've said so far that I think really resonate with me. Number one, and I'm going to put it in my own words, time is irrelevant, which it really is. Customers don't really care about buying 1 hour or 40 hours. Doesn't really matter. It's the result that matters. And the second thing was, and I think the way you put it was essentially listen to the customer to understand your value.
Yeah.
In other words, if I were to paraphrase it, I would say, learn how the customer perceives value. It's the value that you help create as the professional.
Yeah.
And these two concepts to me, I've lived and done this in my own software business for, gosh, over 10 years now. But when I talk to accountants, bookkeepers, and other in this industry, there is a mental block. And you mentioned the mind shift or the mindset. Either term could apply. So I'm just curious, your comment on how do we help professionals remove this mental block that they have to understanding that it's really what the customer values that's important and that how long it takes really doesn't even matter.
Well, and this is the other thing that we as a profession are not very good at is we have to ask our customer how we're doing. You know, a lot of times I'll work with firms and I'll be like, are your customers happy? They're like, yeah. Like, how do you know they're happy? They come back. Well, you go back to your dentist. Does that mean
that's
you're
not
happy?
A compliment?
So, happy means that you become that cherished advisor, that you are the center of their business world, right? Like, whenever they have an issue, they're like, I really need to talk to Hector or Kirk because they'll either know somebody or be able to point me in the right direction. So you become this person that's an integral part of their business, right? That's why it's called integrative advisory services. It's like you're not this outside entity that they're too afraid to call because you might charge them for that 15 minutes. When you think about value billing and how that fits into advisory services, you have to look at it like an insurance plan. So some clients 1 month need more of your time and some clients another month need more of your time. You've built in a recurring subscription revenue model to help you be able to take care of the clients that need you most in each month.
Certainly. And it may be on a revenue model. It may be on a project basis. That really doesn't matter. The mind shift that we're talking about is you've got to realize that what you provide to the customer has got to be bigger than what you record on a timesheet, what you can hand them on a piece of paper, what the technology integration is. Those are just all pieces of the puzzle. But you want to bring something that they perceive as more valuable. How do you know it's more valuable? You talk to them. You know, when you said we don't ask questions, I was like, oh my gosh, she gave away the secret. We're all out of the job. But yes, this idea, I call it this skill of asking great questions. You've got to become aware of how do you ask a question more than once? How do you rephrase a question? When you don't get the answer that you know there's a deeper answer, how do you come back again? You've got to work on the soft skills, and it boils down to communication. It's not ones and zeros.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of times, you know, you're getting paid for listening about their kids or their problems with their boss. It has nothing to do with accounting, right? But you have to be able to have those conversations so that you can hear those things like, oh, this is something happening in the business, or I'm going to have to work on this business process. Now I'm hearing something in that story that I need to actually pause and go, oh, that could be an issue, you know, and you're actually duplicating work. How can we make that more efficient? But if you aren't relatable or have that open communication with your client where they feel comfortable to tell you things, then you're going to miss so much that's going on in the business that actually affect those KPIs and cash flow and budgeting and forecasting, all those things that an advisor does.
Right. And Amy, I want to follow up on that a little bit when it comes to the conversation that has nothing to do with business, but has everything to do with business.
Yeah.
Because what ends up happening is you will have a discussion with your customer about gross profits and changing raw materials and upgrading their machinery. And then all of a sudden the conversation can shift to the last time somebody took a vacation, and then you can digress. But the reason why that's important is because if your customer, and this is one of the mantras I've been sort of, you know, trying to incorporate into my own practice, is the reason why anyone, for example, would be saying, oh, I need a vacation, right? Because that's a normal thing that people say when they get frustrated about, you know, plethora of information being thrown at them. And you say, yeah, when was the last time you took one? And if the answer is not, you know, within the last 6 months or so, then that person is probably being burnt out. And if they are burnt out, it's because they either don't have the resources, the skills, or the tools to do their job properly in such a way that they can disconnect for a week or so to take a vacation. So,
or there could be fraud.
There could be so many things. Yeah. Right? as a business owner, you don't trust anyone, or you think the business will crumble if you leave for a week, that sort of thing. But it's those conversations are really, really important, because when you go back into a important money conversation and there's tension around, I should make an investment in this or not make an investment in this, or the typical thing that we're trying to convince our client to stop spending money in, lack of a better term, stupid things, right? And the customer is saying, no, I need that. Or you're trying to get them to be a bit more frugal or more conservative, or hey, you got to fire this person. This is wasting money, whatever it happens to be. When you get into those conversations of high tension, sometimes the logical money conversation is not good enough. Sometimes it's like, dude, I'm trying to help you get a vacation here. And that and it completely changes the way that somebody is looking at the advisory service. It's no longer maybe just looking at the objective reasons of why we're doing this. Maybe they're starting to think, well, there is some subjective reasons why they want to do this. I mean, he feels passionate about what he's saying, and he feels passionate about my problems that he's trying to resolve, because he was listening when we were having that casual non-business conversation. And I wanted to follow up with something you mentioned, which is you coined the term or try to coin the term or make the central theme of the term cherished advisor. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is in a world where the word trusted advisor has been thrown out there so many times. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to hear what you think about trusted advisor. And you
can- yeah. So just one thing I want to comment before that is what you're talking about is what's called radical candor. And only when we have a comfortable relationship with someone and a relationship of trust can we be critical as well when we need to be of our client, without them feeling like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to fire this accountant, they're a jerk. Like, they know it's out of love. They know it's out of we care about your business. We're invested. We know your business. We know your bookkeeper. We know your controller. We know the guys in operations. Like, we've been there. We understand what you're talking about, but I'm going to give you some hard news right now. And I'm doing it out of love because I am here to make sure outside of your business is going to achieve. The only way you can give advice like that as an advisor is when you develop the relationship on the stuff that's non-accounting, right? Because they feel like you're invested. And that really is what the cherished advisor is about. And, you know, I was writing the foreword to the book that I actually started thinking through. I mean, I spent a lot of time coming up with what is the right term to call an advisor. And I looked up the definition of trusted. And it says honest and sincere and ethical. And it's like, well, that's what we should be. Like, that we shouldn't be striving for.
That's all baked in the cake.
Yeah. So as an accountant and in these roles as professionals, we have a duty of care, that we have responsibility of very personal information. And it's up to us to be trusted. right? Like that's baked in. And out of all the professionals out there, accountants, CPAs, bookkeepers are at the top of the food chain of being trusted as professionals. But if you ask the same questions to clients, is does my accountant have time to answer my questions? I'm worried about my cash flow. Who do I go to help me in those situations? That's where we start falling off, right? Because we don't necessarily pick up the phone when we need to pick up the phone because we're too, it's not being mean or that we don't want to, it's that we don't have the time, that we're trying to keep up with all these deadlines and a lot of our processes are inefficient because we haven't taken the time to automate and actually step back in our business to do those things or customize who our target market is so we can create an efficient automated process with those types of clients and not really go out of our wheelhouse. And when I looked up the word cherished, it's like, that is it. When I think about some of my clients and, you know, I lived in South Florida with a business in 2006 when everything tanked in the construction business. And I was heavily focused in the construction industry. So anything, you know, it could have been outside accessories, pool people, mosquitoes, you know, whatever it is, everybody was suffering. And I remember, and when I thought of this word, I thought of this client that called me and said, I have $250. Will you meet with me? And I was like, that's it. That's when you know that you have been delivering the services that you should be as an advisor, right? Like that $250 to them right then was like $1 million. That's all they had as free cash flow. And they thought that that advice that my company gave them was so important that they were gonna spend that $250 on that. That's when you know you're cherished. And so it's important when you're going through designing this process, it's not just about the technology, like you said in the beginning, it's about setting up technology that's meaningful to your client, that as you're setting up that technology, you're getting feedback from them. Like for instance, if you're working with like website developers, creatives, musicians, whatever it is, and you put them in software that's ugly, it does not matter how great the software is, they're gonna be miserable in the software. And they won't use it, and they won't use it in the way you want them to use it because they're very visual. It's important to understand the pain points of the customers that you're targeting so that you design it in a way that makes them comfortable where they can do the work that you need them to do so that you're freed up to spend the time working with them in the way you need to.
And I'll add on to that, that it's not just the design of the software because a lot of times we don't control that, right? Especially if we're married to one brand only and the design is a design. I think that that customer persona you're talking about, right, whether they're creative type.
I'm talking about the customer, not us.
Or a square type. Yeah. It's not just the design of the software. It's also how we present the workflow of the software. I mean, so you can actually adapt. You can take ugly software, but you can explain how it works in a way that makes sense to them, and then they could maybe perceive it. Maybe they won't perceive it pretty ever, but they will perceive it at least as, in terms of UI, it's functional or it makes sense. So I wanna move to the other book, to Business Balance and Bliss, and talk about the B3 method. But I'd like to add one more comment. Last week I went to a YouTubers conference, and that would be in a whole other episode to talk about what that was. And one of the sessions was about primal branding, which is based on a book, I forget the author's name, called Primal Branding, where they talk about really basic elements of branding. And as an advisor, just as Amy, as a keynote speaker and an educator, we all need to have our own elements of branding that sticks with the customer that we're talking to, and people identify you with it. And I want to steal a page from your book. You use the term cherished advisor for two reasons. One, I don't think anybody's ever said it before, so it's not commonly said. So you try to pick a unique term, right, that brands you, right? So now, like anyone that will hear you talk, we hear anybody else say cherished advisor, and they'll probably think of you first. So that's a very important heuristic that Amy's doing here. She's creating internal terminology to strengthen her brand. And you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong here.
No, that's true.
And two, you also made it easy to understand, right? Because there's so many adjectives that are similar to positive, that are similar to cherish. Mm-hmm. So I like to point out, because that's something I learned there. That wasn't something I was looking at, like specific language that people use to go with a brand, and just like colors and logo and the way you dress, how you speak also, it's a strong piece of the branding. So I wanted to add that. Now on the business balance and bliss, and I think a lot of this comes from the fact that you're a yogi and you have a yoga studio. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that even while you're practicing as an accountant and you were working for these big companies, you were always a yogi instructor, right?
Yes.
So yoga has always impacted how you think and your leadership skills and your advisory skills. So I would love, can you talk a little bit about that, mm-hmm. about that, how yoga impacted this particular book, and talk about the B3 method?
Yeah, so it really has been derived out of my journey, and I wouldn't say my whole career I was doing it. It really came through an evolution of very type A driven, trying to work toward all of these goals that I had for myself. And it wasn't until I really hit this pinnacle time in my career where I became a partner in a CPA firm that I really had this moment of like, wow, am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Because I hit this goal that I've been striving for. I'm like, oh, I'm there. it wasn't like, oh, I'm so excited. It was like, I didn't have the feeling that I thought I was going to have when I got there, which really made me step back in my own life and do some assessment, which I had never done ever. Like I went into my career for a lot of different reasons, but mostly financial. I had a lot of economic hardship in high school, being an accountant, a CPA was a very safe career to go into. My grandfather had been a CPA, had heard about it, so it was driven not necessarily from the passion that I ended up having and realizing I had for it. And I really looked at it as an occupation rather than a purpose. And when I got to that point, I had started yoga in my 30s, basically because of getting sick from a pregnancy, and I wasn't allowed to do anything else. So I started yoga, and I started seeing a therapist at the same time. And a lot of times people don't talk about this out loud, but they were two things that happened that are really important in my life to make me step back and kind of just do that internal work that I needed to do. And the B3 method, it represents, and I am an accountant, business plus balance equals bliss. It's a formula that we can kind of put into our lives to kind of click in for us. But it's a journey, and there's no like award-winning, balanced person. Really what it does for my life and for others that have been on the journey is that it creates awareness when you get off. And a lot of times in the accounting field, we have so many hours, we're working so many hours that we don't take time for ourselves, because when we do, we feel guilty because we're working so much. We're like, oh, we should be home with the family or doing something else. And then we don't take the time we need to actually work on our inner selves. And as we become adults, we start letting those things go. And the methodology is really built around making sure we're better at time management and delving into our inner passions and talents and setting aside a time for that. Because when we don't set aside time for ourselves, we actually are not as good for our clients, for our staff, for our coworkers, and for our family, because we haven't reset ourselves. So we take stress into every situation, and that just keeps building and building and building. So this book is really to help. It's a self-assessment book to really help people go on this journey. I do a keynote talk on it as well. And then I'm launching in a few weeks what's called the B3 Method Institute, where people will be able to subscribe and on a weekly basis get like 5 to 10 minute lessons that they can incorporate into their week, and then try just one thing that week every single day so that you can see how it feels in your life and if it makes any kind of shift for you. Because we have all these natural tools within us to be able to create more mindfulness in our day, to create more peace in our interactions with other people and compassion for what somebody else is going through as well when we come in with our own issues. And how do we merge that together so we create what I call bliss? And in yoga, that's the Sanskrit word is Satchinanda, which is really the nature of your soul, right? Like it is that you're self-aware that you exist and that you're not forgetting about yourself and all this craziness of what goes on in our world.
Amy, one of the things that we love to ask each of our guests as we get toward the end of our time is kind of something that would give you a chance to kind of reflect back on your career. Because the whole point, well, not the whole point, but one of the things that as advisors that we do is we give advice, right? And so it would make sense that we would ask you, well, what's the best advice you've ever been given?
Just do it.
So basically you went to the ad meeting for Nike.
Yeah, no.
Wrote it down. No, I'm joking.
You know, we put up so many barriers of just trying something, right? And actually, this happened as part of my business balance bliss journey. You know, I was a painter when I was in high school, and I loved painting. And so when I was kind of going through this journey myself, I was like, I want to get back to painting. It just felt really good. Should I go back to school? What do I need to do? You know, and so forth. So my husband and I ended up on this art cruise where the painter, it was an auction of paintings, and the artists were there speaking about their paintings. And one of the artists, I was like, oh my gosh, everything he said, I totally identified with. So he then, afterward, I'm like, can I speak to you? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, so I'm thinking about that. I need to, you know, I want to start painting again. I really miss it. Do I need to go back to school? Like, what do I need to do? And he's like, here's what you do. You get in your car, you drive to Michael's, you buy paints and a canvas board and go home and paint. And this is like such a simple example, but this is where business balance and bliss comes into your real life, right? You see, when you try things in your personal life and you see what barriers you put up for yourself mentally, you do the same things at work. So where, when you're trying to dive into advisory services or new technology, do you put up that barriers? Well, I need to take this class first. I need to, you know, talk to this person. Actually, all of our learning is just by doing it. We fail as we go through things, and we can't be afraid of that because we learn from the process and we get better and better. Advisory there, that is how we get better, is through the experiences and just doing it.
And that's what I tell, you know, it's interesting. You talk about soft skills, and that's what I spend most of my time teaching people to do. It's amazing to me. And the advice you just gave would really be a great way for me to turn a 50-minute session into a 5-second session. Exactly. Do it, right? But we need some confidence, and we feel like we need some structure to go into it. But whatever it is, getting out and having some experience, and if that experience is successful, great. If it's not successful, okay.
And I'll teach you something.
Just because it wasn't successful doesn't mean there wasn't something positive that came out of it. Just because you can't, quote, put it in the win column doesn't mean that there's no value to it. How does a coach, and I'm a big SEC football fan, and that's no secret on this show. So, you know, how does he, you know, he's got two great quarterbacks and he starts one for three games. How does he learn to start the other one? Well, after three games and 6 interceptions, yeah, he made some mistakes. So he starts the other one and then he wins out the next 5 games. It might be that type of scenario. And it's okay to do that. Sports analogies translate to business well. Why? Because in sports, it's again, you know, you've got a win-loss column, you can track it. Okay, What helped us win? Why, you know, why do we lose, right? Same thing in business. We may not track wins and losses, but what is successful and what's failure, and what are the things that move us one direction or the other?
Yes.
And sitting still never won anything.
Yes.
So Amy, we'll wrap things up here. Are there any last, is there a one key advice that you tend to give to most professional advisors or accountants? Is there one generic advice you would like to add? And then also to wrap it up, just kind of tell us how people can learn more about your program and your books and all that stuff.
Sure. So just going on the vein of just doing it, right? I learned this very early in my business. And I would say this to anybody starting out a business. I was 27 years old when I started my first accounting services business, and I fell into QuickBooks by accident because I saw someone with the certification on an ad and I was like, oh, that looks good. So I got my QuickBooks certification. It was not on purpose. And then I got my first call because I was originally going to do bookkeeping services. So number one, you may think you know what your business is, but your customers are going to determine what your business is. So then I got my first call and he's like, well, I don't want bookkeeping. I'd like you to come out and look at my QuickBooks and tell me what I'm doing right or wrong. And I didn't really know QuickBooks that well. So I was like, all right. So I went out, and I, before that, had used SAP and really big software applications. I was in audit. So this was really new for me. So I went out and he had a list of all these questions. And I was like, I'll get back to you on that. I'll get back to you on that. I'll get back to you on that. I didn't really have any answers for him during that meeting because I didn't know it. But what I found very early on was all he cared about was my responsiveness, right? I went home, I researched the answers. By the next day, I said, here are the three things that were open from our meeting, and this is how you do it. He was happy. So don't feel like you have to be the expert in order to be an advisor. That it's about the responsiveness up to the client so that they feel like you care. And if you want to find more information, I've got a website, amyvetter.com, and you will see there information about the B3 Method Institute coming soon. You can join my Facebook page, which I have a professional Facebook page for amyvetter.com, where we've created a private Facebook group you can request to join in, which is the B3 Method community group. And so we'll be sending out information as it launches in September. So I want to thank you for having me on. It was fun.
Oh, thank you, Amy. We cherish your advice.
Very good.